relaxed, changed to get other results, but I won't talk about any of that. Okay, so what is the motivation for doing this? And this is the original motivation that we had for doing ABJM theory on S3, localizing ABJM theory on S3. First of all, because it has the ability to give exact results, and those are few and far between in quantum field theory. A calculation was done by Vasily Pestun on the four sphere. It had some very nice result, at least for some of the cases. And we were jealous, so we wanted to do something in three dimensions. Localization enables exact computations, even in strongly coupled theories. So you're basically computing holomorphic or BPS observables, which is why you can even do it. But this allows you to make the computation. And we're going to talk specifically about IR fixed points of 3D gauge theories. Sometimes I'll present some superconformal 3D gauge theories that have Chern-Simons terms. And sometimes I'll just talk implicitly about the IR fixed point of a Yang-Mills theory, but always a CFT. Okay, more motivations, many new and interesting supersymmetric theories and supersymmetric dualities of IR fixed points. So Gaiota-Witten, Bagger-Lambert-Gustafson, Aroni Bergman-Jaffaris Maldacena, Aroni Bergman-Jaffaris, and so on, all came out at approximately the same time, and there was a point in calculating something. Holographic duals are also available for many of these theories, so you can compute things at strong coupling on the other side and hopefully make comparisons. And a bonus that came later that wasn't due to us, which is that the Euclidean partition function on S3 actually knows something about the RG flow of the theory that I'll show at the end. And since I'm going to be surveying many different topics, please feel free to interrupt me, because once I'm finished with a topic, I'll go on. So just ask questions. Okay, so what is path integral localization? I've split it up into two parts. One of them is deformation. I'll always be talking about computing a correlator or an expectation value of an observable that preserves part of the supersymmetry. In this case, I've taken it to be Q closed. I identify an appropriate conserved fermionic charge, and I'll choose some positive semi-definite functional. Actually, that's the variation of this V, and the functional that I will be choosing will be V. Q will square to zero on V, and the main claim is that deformation of the action by this total Q variation here doesn't change the expectation value of any of the observables that I just mentioned. And that's a simple consequence of the fact that they're Q closed. If you take the derivative of the expectation value with respect to T, that's a total Q variation of everything. So it's like a change of integration variables. So I'll add some Q-closed operators, but specifically, I can always take the operator 1 and compute the partition function. So how do I actually compute? I take the extreme t goes to infinity limit. And since I took some positive semi-definite functional here, I will localize to this the values where this functional is 0, because everything away from there is very, very small. And it is parametrically small in t. And that means that around this zero locus, the semi-classical approximation becomes exact. So instead of computing an entire path integral, all I have to do is find this zero locus and do the semi-classical approximation. That's not as easy as it sounds always, because there might be a lot of saddle points to sum over. They might be very complicated. You might have to do semi-classical approximation. It doesn't just mean plug in a value into the action. It also means take the fluctuation determinant around that point. That may become complicated. We'll see that in this particular case, it's very, very simple.
Could there be different choices for?
Absolutely, although I've only ever seen anybody choose one thing. So the point is that V doesn't matter, right? Any V that you choose, as long as it, you know, doesn't cause some runaway to some infinity, it's still going to give you this nice deformation doesn't matter thing, but you want to choose the one that gives you the easiest calculation. And the easiest calculation is done by choosing V to be some fermion bilinear. I'll write it down explicitly in a second, but I've only ever seen anybody use that. Okay, I'll be doing all the computations on S3, so let me start by describing how to do supersymmetry on S3. Of course, a lot more concrete works on this about how you put theories on various manifolds and preserve supersymmetry and so on, but we were very simple-minded. We just put everything on S3 by taking all the derivatives to be covariant with respect to the metric. The scalars get a conformal mass proportional to the Ricci scalar. And you can check that the theory is supersymmetric when you make those two things. What does it mean to be supersymmetric? Well, S3 has a curvature, so there are no covariantly constant spinners, but there's something like this, a Killing spinner, that has this property, that d mu epsilon is alpha gamma mu epsilon. In the case of the three-sphere, this alpha is plus minus I over 2, so two of each. And what I mean by supersymmetric is that the theory is invariant under doing the variation with respect to this guy. So actions with fermionic symmetries can be constructed. In fact, for a flat space action, it's not hard to construct the action on S3 that still preserves these supersymmetries. Let me say, if we start, we'll do most of the things I'll do will be in n equals 2 theories, so four real supercharges in Minkowski space. In Euclidean signature, which I'll immediately go to, it's two independent complex two-component spinners, and the same thing will be on S3. Go. Yes. Okay. So I'll start by describing the localization for a vector multiplet. This is the n equals 2 vector multiplet, which is just like the n equals 1 vector multiplet in four dimensions. Sigma is the fourth direction of the gauge field. D is some auxiliary scalar. And we have the gaugino in the connection, and additional, of course, gauge fixing fields, which are actually important to remember when you're doing a path integral calculation. I've set the radius of the S3 to 1 because the theory is superconformal, all the theories that I'll be considering, and none of the expectation values are going to depend on R. And I've written the gaugino variation. This epsilon is one of the epsilons that I showed before. And I chose one of them. I can't choose them all. I have to choose one that preserves whatever expectation value I have. And choosing one is enough. In the case of a partition function, I could have chosen any one. In the case of a Wilson loop that I'll show shortly, I should choose one that's compatible with the Wilson loop. Either way, I'll only be considering one variation with respect to one epsilon. And this is it. This is not exactly like the flat space variation. The flat space variation doesn't have this sigma part over here. The sigma part basically popped out because we took the derivative of a spinner that was not constant. There will be a 1 over R there, yes. To make the dimensions, there's only one dimensional parameter here, and you can restore it at any time. Okay. The gauge fixing is actually important, so a slight technical note. We actually localize with respect to this charge Q tilde. That's the supersymmetry transformation plus the BRST transformation. And there's a small computation to be done to make sure that the two complexes are, you know, in harmony with one another, and you can actually localize with respect to both of them. They commute. Okay, obviously the functional V should be gauge invariant. And this is the functional that I was talking about that Pestum took in four dimensions and we'll take in three dimensions. Q of lambda, dagger of everything, lambda. Okay, this will give me a positive definite action that will be useful for localizing. I could have chosen something else. So what happens when you act with Q, what happens when you act with Q one more time on the V that I just showed? You get this localizing function now. So this is not the original action. This is the Q exact part that I'm adding to the action in order to localize the original action. And you can easily see that this is positive definite. What else should I say about this? This looks like a Yang-Mills action, very similar to a Yang-Mills action, even if the theory that I started with had only a Chern-Simons action, or even if the theory that I started with was an IR fixed point of a Yang-Mills theory in which the Yang-Mills term, its coefficient, had already gone to zero. I'm restoring it here. And T is arbitrary. For any T, adding this S to the original action doesn't change the expectation values of any of the operators I talked. What does this localize you to? So now I'm taking the t goes to infinity limit and asking what are the field configurations on which this entire functional vanishes. So this just imposes a gauge condition, and the rest of it is easy to solve. The equation I actually didn't write down, but it's the equation is star f equals d mu sigma. That's the only non-trivial equation to solve here from these two parts. And the only solution is what I wrote down here, which is fortuitous because this is an extremely simple solution. There are no instantons. There is nothing like that, and no very non-trivial field configurations. In fact, everything is zero with the exception of D and sigma, which must be constant, constant on S3. This is the so-called zero locus. These are all the configurations on which this functionality vanishes, and they're all the configurations that I need to consider in order to compute the expectation values. This is a continuous set of configurations, so I have to integrate over them. So what I'll have is a matrix model. Why a matrix model? Because sigma lives in the Lie algebra of the gauge group. It's a joint valued, and I've only taken one of its modes, so the path integral reduces to integrating one matrix that lives in the Lie algebra. Yeah, the fermion. The
invariant.
True, yes. It's equivalent, even though this is easier, because it's a sum of squares. But yes, you could take the Gugino variation and ask where it vanishes. Excuse me? You want specifically how you do it? This, let's see. This already tells you that A mu is trivial, right? On a string, yeah. Okay, so the first term, this is why I said that the sum of squares is easier to deal with. The first term already tells you that A is trivial, so I may as well take it to be zero. It obviously satisfies my gauge condition, and then sigma has just ordinary derivatives acting on it, so it must be constant. Okay, so this is what the path integral reduces to sort of schematically. An integral over sigma equals constant. Of course, since we're integrating over this part, this mode exactly, I still have to plug it into the original action. Okay, all I've done is deform the action. I haven't gotten rid of the original action. So this is the semi-classical approximation. Take sigma equals constant. There's going to be no contributions just from here. Right, well, okay. There's going to be, might be a contribution from the original action or from any observables. And take the one loop determinant around any of those configurations of this, of the localizing functional, because it's the one that's going in the h bar goes to zero limit or t goes to infinity limit. It's the one that's going semi-classical. Okay, so here's an example of each one of the things that I just mentioned. The first one is the fluctuation determinant. It's the ratio of the eigenvalues for the Laplacian on S3 for a vector field raised to their degeneracy. The kinetic term acting on the vector field, of course, depends on this background sigma. I've rewritten everything as A here, so this is its dependence on A. And in the numerator, I have the stuff coming from the Gugino. Actually, most of the other stuff cancels out. You have fluctuations of sigma itself, fluctuations of D, but a lot of things cancel out, and this is what you get. To evaluate this sort of expression, you have to do some sort of regularization, zeta function or otherwise, and what you get is this. So I promised it would be very simple, and it is. This is a cinch A over A, basically, where A is the matrix, and alpha runs over all the roots of the Lie algebra. This is an example of the other part. So suppose that I had a Chern-Simons term in the original action. I've not written the entire Chern-Simons function out because the rest of it is basically zero. But there is a part that looks like 2d sigma, and that's not zero on my background sigma, and it just goes to this. Okay? It's you have the roots alpha have alpha goes to minus alpha, so that's true. Come back to it when we do the matter determinant. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Okay. And down here I've done an example of a supersymmetric operator, a BPS-Wilson loop. That was our original motivation to calculate expectation values of Wilson loops. So this is a Wilson loop that exists in any n equals 2 theory. It's half BPS from the point of view of n equals 2. And you can easily see if I plug in the background values, A is zero, sigma is a constant. This is the insertion into the matrix model. This is very similar to the insertion that Pestun had in four dimensions. This is the entire matrix model, for instance, for a Chern-Simons theory with no matter. Okay? I have the classical Chern-Simons term, the one-loop determinant, and possibly a Wilson loop in some representation R. This matrix model was known before we derived it, not to us, but it was known. It was derived by Mourinho just as sort of a generating functionale, a generating matrix model for Witten's results for the partition function and the Wilson loop in pure Chern-Simons theory. But it's a nice check that we get exactly the same thing. Pure Chern-Simons theory and n equals 2 Chern-Simons theory are basically the same because all the other fields are auxiliary. I'm sorry? This would be for the unknot or for the partition function or for many unknots with linking number 1. You could still do this. In principle, I think you could do this for any Wilson loop because there's a lot more, the pure Chern-Simons functionale, even the n equals 2 functionale, actually preserves a lot more supersymmetry. It's not really a supersymmetry, but more fermionic symmetries than what I just wrote down. And you can probably make any loop, evaluate any loop by localization. But you don't really need to. You know that they're all, you can blow them all up. Okay. So exact results are obviously available. We're compared to this. The matrix model was already known, so it compared well. One technical detail is that there is, of course, a framing ambiguity in pure Chern-Simons, and the computation using localization demands a specific framing. You can call it the supersymmetric framing. I think it's minus 1 in Witten's notation. So the more interesting part is to do matter fields, because pure Chern-Simons, you can do anything you want, even without localization. So here's an n equals 2 chiral multiplet, and here is the variation of the fermion. And I've written out the localizing term, which now looks a little bit more complicated. I guess I didn't write what V is, but V is very similar to the V that I wrote before, only with the fermion replaced with this, the Gugino replaced with this fermion. And what appears in the localizing term now is this V mu, which is just a vector field on the sphere that corresponds to sort of commuting the, anti-commuting the two supersymmetries, the epsilon and epsilon dagger, and it appears. Okay, this is the vector field under which any operator that you would want to localize had better be invariant. For instance, there are integral curves of this vector field along which you can wrap a Wilson loop, and the Wilson loop will be invariant under this particular supersymmetry. And happily, no additional zero modes arise. So there are no zero modes for this function now, independent of sigma. There are no zero modes for this function now, so all the fields are just set to 0. Specifically, this means, for instance, that the superpotential for the original theory, which obviously depends on all the fields in the chiral multiplet, doesn't matter for the localization procedure. This is not so weird, but it really doesn't matter. It will matter in a sort of subtle way that I'll come back to in a second. But here, it's localized to 0. So it certainly does not by itself make any contribution to the matrix model. Yes, that is the subtle point that I'll come back to in a second. Okay, so I haven't written out the modes and the infinite determinant, but this is what you get if you do it. Again, you need to know the eigenmodes of the Laplacian for the scalar and for the fermion on the sphere. You also need, you have this additional vector, which makes the computation a little bit more complicated, but not much. The result, however, is very, very simple. At least for matter content of an n equals 4 theory, which is 2 chirals in the R and R bar representations. In that case, it's very, very simple. For a general chiral superfield, and let's already take a general chiral superfield with conformal dimension delta and not the UV conformal dimensions half, it's again, just a little bit, well, okay, maybe a lot more complicated. Instead of 1 over cosh, you get this L function that I think was first written down by Jafaris. This is the Li 2 there is a polylog, and this just solves that equation. That equation comes about by the way that you compute the determinant. this is more complicated. The way that the dimension comes in, you can see in the fermion variation there. And how exactly it comes in, you can already see that there is an I sigma phi and a delta phi, and that'll be very important, that it comes in exactly that way. Okay, so I'm done localizing basically an arbitrary n equals 2 gauge theory with arbitrary matter and arbitrary representations of the gauge group. And now I'd like to check my results a little bit for some known results. And Chern-Simons partition function was, of course, computed by other means. And you can check that you really get it by localization. So this is it right there, as long as, again, we take the supersymmetric framing. You can also do the unknot. You can do several linked unknots, but it turns out to be nothing particularly interesting. Linking number one. The reason that you can do specifically those is because, again, you need integral curves of this vector field that I showed. So that's a nice check. But let's do something non-trivial. For instance, let's take ABJM. This has n equals 6 or n equals 8, depending on the level. It's a superconformal Chern-Simons matter theory. We don't need to worry about taking the IR limit. I'm going to take gauge group UN cross UN, Chern-Simons levels k and minus k, and two hypermultiplets in the n and bar representation, so the bifundamental. Specifically, this is supposed to be the low, for k equals 1, it's supposed to be the low energy limit of n equals 8 super Young Mills. So n equals 8 super Young Mills is the theory on the two brains, and this is the theory on multiple M2 brains. And it has a holographic dual, so there's lots and lots to compare to. And what operator should we do? Well, let's do this n equals 2 Wilson loop. So again, this preserves two real supercharges. It's half BPS from the point of view of n equals 2. However, there's for instance, if you're worried about holography and you're thinking of string theory in the case of large k, let's say, this could not represent a fundamental string. However, there's a different operator that's similar to this one, that is half BPS in the n equals 6 sense, that could represent a fundamental string. And it's in the same cohomology class. Specifically, it has the same expectation value. By cohomology, I mean the Q cohomology. Okay. So the matrix model for ABJM, using the ingredients that I showed before, involves two matrices, ABJM as a product gauge group. And here I've written the two matrices just as two eigenvalues. So this is a Hermitian matrix model. I can use the remaining gauge symmetry to diagonalize the matrix and go to eigenvalues. The van der Monde determinant cancels the denominator for the one loop determinant for the gauge fields. So you get just the sinh and not sinh over something that I showed before. And this is the entire matrix model, which might look a little complicated, but is certainly much, much easier than doing calculations in ABJM itself. And I've put in an insertion for the fundamental Wilson loop. Okay, so you can compute this expectation value. We just computed it in perturbatively in the Tuft coupling. And at large n, we've got the first few non-trivial terms in that expansion, and you can compare that to perturbative results. So you can, at large, this implies large k, and at large k, you can compute this sort of perturbatively in ABJM itself, and it compares well. So this would be a first check. Slightly nicer things were done by other people. So you can compute this matrix model. You can take the large n limit of the matrix model. And there's a lot of technology for taking large n limits of matrix models. And you can compute the expectation value exactly in lambda at large n. And it does scale as expected from holography. So I guess this is lambda large. This is strongly coupled. You could not do this calculation in perturbation theory in ABJM, but you can do it exactly in the matrix model. And you can compare it to the calculation in the dual. One other thing that you can do is just compute the partition function without the insertion of the Wilson loop. And what you get is a derivation, really, of this very mysterious scaling for the free energy with number of degrees of freedom. So it was known from the gravity side that any theory that was dual to this, in this, this M theory background would have to have a number of degrees of freedom with scales like n to the 3 halves, which is very strange for a field theory or gauge theory to expect n squared, right? Certainly not something to a fractional power. But you can get this from the large n limit of the matrix model. You calculate the partition function, and this is how it goes at large n. This is Jucker, Mourinho, and Putra. There are other quiver gauge theories that are so-called balanced quivers that are similar to ABJM and also have ADS duals, for which this result was also derived. And also, it's not just the scaling with n, it's also the leading coefficient in front of it that can be compared to the holographic results, and it also matches. It's not just that the two are related, it actually reproduces a coefficient for the free energy that you can compute in supergravity. Excuse me? I think it's related just to the volume, yes. But there might be multiplied by the Planck scale, but it's related to the volume, yes, of the compact. Okay, so those were the observables, but we used this leverage the technology from this matrix model to, for instance, subject some of the dualities that were proposed for three-dimensional supersymmetric gauge theories to some scrutiny. And you could do that, for instance, by computing observables on both sides, but then you have to know the mapping of observables. You could compute the partition function on both sides. The partition function is just a number, and if you got the same number, it wouldn't be very convincing. So let's deform the original action by some supersymmetric deformation so that we have some free parameters to play with. And let's compare partition functions as functions of those. The first deformation that I'll do is this real mass term, doesn't exist in four dimensions, which is equivalent to weakly gauging a flavor symmetry. So it doesn't look like this thing, Vm there is a background vector, and it has only a particular theta component turned on. And it doesn't look like it could preserve supersymmetry, but it does. This m comes in just as a central charge. It changes the supersymmetry transformations. And this action, which includes the kinetic term, of course, still preserves the same amount of supersymmetry. And it's easy to see from, even though I haven't written it down, it's easy to see from the supersymmetry transformations that what this m does is shift the rho of A that was, I think, two or three slides ago. Let me go back. In the one-loop determinant for the matrix model, either the top or the bottom version, you would shift rho of A by the real mass. And this will be important later for another application. But right now, it just says that instead of 1 over 2 cosh pi rho A, it's 1 over 2 cosh pi rho plus M. The other thing that we can do is put in an FI term. An FI term is also equivalent to gauging a topological symmetry. In three dimensions, star F is an identically conserved current, and you can weakly gauge it. And this is the supersymmetric version of that. And again, we're going to turn on only one component of the background gauge field, well, the background gauge multiplet, and put it into the action. This doesn't change the supersymmetry transformations. This is supersymmetric in the same way that it was before. But it turns out that it has D in it, right? The FI term is basically integral of D. And D was turned on by the matrix model. So it does contribute a classical contribution, just like the Chern-Simons term does. So if you had this in the original action, you would better include this contribution in the matrix model. So both of these affect the matrix model, but in very, very simple ways. The reason why we chose these two deformations is because there's a symmetry in three dimensions called mirror symmetry, which exchanges, well, OK. It relates IR limits of different theories. Here I've written n equals 4 supersymmetric gauge theories. There's an n equals 2 version, but I won't talk about it. And it can be realized with S-duality of type 2B brain construction. So up here I have two elliptic quivers. There are multiple D3 brains running. Those are the circles, and I have various NS5s and D5s. And this entire thing has a low energy action that's just a quiver theory where every D5 contributes one fundamental field. Every D3 segment contributes a vector multiplet with UN. And every NS5 contributes a bifundamental field to the two segments that it sort of bounds. And its dual is the S dual. So NS5s get exchanged with D5s, and D3s are invariant. And this tells you that, at least in the low energy limit, where that action was correct, the two theories, the two quiver theories described by these two brain constructions should be equivalent. So they're in the same universality class. And specifically, this duality exchanges the Higgs and Coulomb branches of the moduli space in three dimensions. This is why it's called mirror symmetry. And it exchanges the masses, the real masses, with the Fi terms. So the real masses and Fi terms have to do with symmetries of the Coulomb and Higgs branches. And it exchanges the two, and that's why those were the supersymmetric deformations that we chose. And it would now be very nice to take two such theories and try to write down their very, very different partition functions with the same deformations and see if they agree. This is no longer comparing a number, it's comparing a function of many, many numbers, of many, many parameters. Okay? And the basic tricks that we'll need for this are actually very, very simple. The function 1 over cosh pi x is its own Fourier transform. That's the first thing we need to know. For instance, that second point there completely describes the fact that that a free hypermultiplet in three dimensions is equivalent to a U1 gauge theory with the Yang-Mills term and with a charge 1 hypermultiplet. U1 in three dimensions is equivalent to actually to a free hypermultiplet. A free hypermultiplet is written on the left-hand side there and U1 on the right-hand side. The e to the 2 pi I sigma eta is the Fi deformation for U1. There are no mass deformations for U1. Well, no, for n equals 4 U1. And on the left-hand side, this is the real mass deformation for the free hypermultiplet. And the partition functions are sort of trivially the same just by this Fourier identity. The other thing that we'll need is a version of the Cauchy determinant formula. So all we ever have in the matrix model, at least without Chern-Simons terms, are these cinches over coshes. And all we really know how to do is integrate, is do the Fourier transform of coshes. So this is very, very useful to express all these cinches over coshes as a sum. Here, rho is a permutation of the indices. So the indices I and j are indices in the of the eigenvalues, and rho is a permutation. So how do you prove the duality? Well, the integral can be written as a set of contributions from the NS5 brains and for the D5 brains. And using the two basic identities that I showed you before, you can write it in the manifestly duality invariant way. There's no way that I know of that you can do this just by adding auxiliary fields and integrating out fields, except for maybe the most basic case of U1 in the full theory. So this is a check of part of the theory, the supersymmetric partition function on S3. But for this part, it actually does work. Without the deformation, this manifestly duality invariant way of writing the partition function is written down here. The 1 over n factorial, by the way, is the factor from the Weil group of the gauge group. And the mapping of deformations, that is m to eta, or real masses to Fi terms, takes the expected form. So you could see what deformation should map to what, and it does take that form. One version of this that's a slightly more complicated version of S duality, you need to use also the T generator, is the fact that ABJM, as I said, is the same as n equals 8 super Yang-Mills, at least at k equals 1. You can derive this with a sort of mirror symmetry type thing. If you write ABJM as an elliptic quiver, and you put the brains in the right places, and you work with the T generator as well as the S generator, you can see this from the brains. The matrix models for these two theories look very, very different. Specifically, the ABJM one has this factor up here. Well, both, no, not this one. This one up here, which So it has this Gaussian factor, and this one has nothing like that. And yet it turns out that the two are actually the same. So I've written everything out, including deformations here, and the deformation map down here. Excuse me? This one?
Yes.
This came from the Chern-Simons term. E to the sigma squared. That came from the Chern-Simons term. Why they match? Yeah, they do. No, again. So the upper one is, so you're doing the IR limit of n equals 8. I'm always doing the CFT, the IR CFT of all the Yang-Mills theories. Okay, and the two should match, right? Yes. How do I show it? Well, you'll have to look in the paper for that. But I use only the two basic tricks that I used before and the fact that I know how to do Gaussian integration. That's basically it. There's nothing else. Okay, so let me, if there are no questions, move on to a different type of duality in three dimensions, or a class of dualities in three dimensions. These are cyborg-like dualities. The first one I'd like to talk about is the one proposed by Givon and Kutasov, which is a duality for a theory that has a single gauge group and a Chern-Simons term, and let's say no Yang-Mills term, and it can be realized again with a brain construction up there. The really different part of this brain construction, or the one that separates it from the brain construction that I showed before for mirror symmetry, which is easily believed, is the fact that here, in order to get the duality of the two theories, you have to move two solitonic brains past each other. And if you do that sort of naively for brains that aren't rotated at an angle, for the type of quivers that Hanani and Witten considered, you get something that doesn't make sense. Specifically, when you move the two solitonic brains next to each other, the gauge coupling goes to infinity. Still, when you move them past each other and require the S rule and the Hanani-Witten effect, creating the D3 brains and so on, you get two theories that you might think are IR dual, but we have checked they are not. That sort of movement would imply a very, very simple type of cyborg duality that it doesn't exist in three dimensions. Don't know exactly why. There's a version of it for n equals 2 theories that I'll introduce later. This one, however, has Chern-Simons terms. So one of the solitonic brains here, if you can see, maybe you can see, is not an NS5, but an NS5 prime, which means that it's actually rotated in some of the directions. And moving it past the other solitonic brain produces a milder singularity and allows you to still match the theories. And the partition functions do match. So this duality maps UNC at level k with NF fundamental flavors to U absolute value of k plus NF minus NC at level minus k with NF number of flavors. And the reason this is a cyborg-like duality is because the flavor symmetries are mapped to one another, and the flavors come into the rank of the dual gauge. There's an N equals 2 version of this, which is slightly more complicated, but which we also checked. I'll show it in a later slide. This duality actually generalizes a non-supersymmetric duality for Chern-Simons theories called level rank duality. So I've already written down this partition function before, and can be checked. It's not hard to check that this is invariant under exchanging k and n. It's not manifest, but it is. This is the NF equals 0 version of the Guvon-Kutasov theories, because again, when you don't have matter, the n equals 2 vector multiplet, just when you only have Chern-Simons terms, the rest of the Gaugino and all the scalars are just auxiliary, can integrate them out to get back pure Chern-Simons theory. And this is what Givon-Kutasov duality implies. For pure Chern-Simons theory, it implies level rank duality. So we know that works. An interesting note, if you now wanted to check Givon-Kutasov duality, the NF equals 1, so one flavor, so the slightly more complicated case than the topological case, The partition function is actually a sum of Wilson loops in the pure transimus theory, or at least it can be written as a sum of Wilson loops in the pure transimus theory. The duality here, level rank duality, maps Wilson loops to Wilson loops. Those are basically the only operators that you have to play with. So you can use that duality, or the fact just that it works in the matrix model, you can use it to verify the NF equals 1 case. And the reduction, NF goes to NF minus 1, works in general, but the mapping is not known in general. So if you wanted to prove this for any NF, you would have to know the mapping of Wilson loops in the NF equals 1 case. And it's not guaranteed that a Wilson loop maps to a Wilson loop. There are other operators, when you include the matter fields, that conceivably a Wilson loop could mix with or map to. Other loop operators, sorter operators. Okay. In the work that we did, cases with a larger number of flavors were verified numerically, but there might be there's additional analytic work that can be done here and proves this. This is another duality. It's not really different. It's a duality between different ABJ theories, so not ABJM, but theories that have different number of colors for the two gauge group factors. They're called ABJ. And I suppose it's not hard to see, but we verified that this is just a node-wise version of the Givon-Kutásov duality. That is, you do Givon-Kutásov duality on one of the products here, one of the gauge groups, and that implies this ABJ duality. So ABJ implies the equivalence of these two theories with product gauge groups. The only subtle thing about this is that when you dualize only one of the gauge groups, you induce a Chern-Simons term for the other gauge group. Because the matter in the two gauge groups is coupled, when you actually do the duality, you induce a Chern-Simons term. And it exactly matches with what you expect from the brain construction. But that's something that would be hard to see without the matrix model. And the fact that you can actually see exactly what you induce, what operators you induce when you do the duality. So you're doing here a duality on just one part of the theory. And in principle, it's coupled to the other theory, so it could induce an action for the other part of the theory. And by knowing that action, you could actually make a nice generalization of this ABJ duality. N plus K minus L. Oh, I might have switched K and L. Let me see. N plus K minus L. No, it's N plus K minus L. Okay, when you move the right NS5 in the A frame past the 1K brain, you create KD3 brains and destroy N plus L of them. Okay, so I promised some N equals 2 dualities. The closest thing to Seiberg duality in three dimensions is something called Aharoni duality, which implies, so this is a duality of the IR limit of just of a theory with just the Yang-Mills term, with NC colors and NF flavors, and it's dual to basically the Seiberg dual gauge group, again with NF flavors plus the Meson matrix that we know. Seiberg duality, an NF cross NF matrix of chirals, which is a gauge invariant. So in three dimensions, it's a little bit different. There are additional fields that are needed to describe the Coulomb branch. So the duality works a little bit differently. And there's a superpotential that's the superpotential for the Seiberg duality in four dimensions, or the equivalent superpotential, and also a superpotential involving these additional fields. These additional fields are not really fundamental fields. For instance, V tilde is not a fundamental field in either side of the duality, which makes this very, very hard to work with. This is not a real Lagrangian written in terms of fundamental fields. However, as I mentioned before, the superpotential doesn't matter for localization. So whatever it is, we can still compute the partition functions for the two theories. And they can be shown to be equal using identities for hyperbolic gamma functions, the generalization of the usual gamma function, which is slightly less general than the elliptic gamma function that was used for the superconformal index in four dimensions. It's sort of a limit of it. Some of the more interesting physics here is the fact that since this is only n equals 2, the dimensions, the conformal dimensions for the chiral multiplets are not protected. You can actually have an anomalous dimension, not anomalous. The dimension can change in the IR, and since the R symmetry is a billion, and it can mix with other U1s, other, let's say, flavor symmetries that are available in the theory. The comparison of the partition functions is insensitive to this effect, which is seems surprising at first, but it's not that surprising. It's sort of, you can see choosing the wrong R symmetry is sort of an equivalent deformation on the two sides of the dual. So comparing them doesn't care about this. However, actually calculating the correct partition function depends on the R symmetry. The R symmetry determines for a chiral field the conformal dimension. And when you take it to the sphere, it determines the supersymmetry transformations because you've done a conformal transformation. So it does come into to the partition function and the expectation value of operators. But for just comparing duals, it doesn't matter. Because even if you compute with the wrong R symmetry, it's sort of equivalent to doing some deformation of the two theories. Can propose something, but no, I don't know. You've got Wilson loops, and you've got a bunch of, and you've got at least one defect operator that preserves the same amount of supersymmetry with which they can mix. So no. In principle, yes. In practice, not yet. Yes. Yeah, Wilson loops are probably the most interesting part of this. You can. The gauge group is different on the two sides. Okay, so you gotta somehow map the representations, and you have different operators. So it would be a very nice check of the duality, and even just a very nice map. Okay, so there's an n equals 2 version of the Givon-Kutásov duality that I showed, but it's actually just the consequence of this more general Aharoni duality. If you take into account the fact that in three dimensions there's a parity anomaly, you have a massive fermion and you integrate it out, it induces a Chern-Simons term if it was charged under some gauge group. And actually, you can get to the Givon-Kutásov theories from the Aharoni theories by just giving large masses to various chirals. So this implies Givon-Kutásov duality, specifically the n equals 2 version. Okay, so those were pretty straightforward. Here's the bonus. The bonus is that the matrix model or the localized Euclidean partition function actually knows something about the RG flow of the theory. And I'll go through the simple things that it knows, and then I'll go through the more complicated conjecture. So in the far IR, the supermultiplet that contains the energy momentum tensor also contains a distinguished U1R R symmetry, the superconformal R symmetry. And in the presence of other flavor U1s, or U1s in general, that are, let's say, preserved all along the flow and that you can see in the UV and are still there in the IR, the IR R symmetry need not be the UV R symmetry. It can be this sort of linear combination. And you don't know what the linear combination is. So determining the correct IR R symmetry requires additional input. For instance, determining the exact partition function requires this additional input because because like it says down there, in three dimensions, the conformal dimension of a chiral superfield is the same as its distinguished R charge. In the UV, it's half. In the IR, who knows? In four dimensions, there's actually a way, the same thing happens, and there's actually a way of finding these coefficients of the Fi. It's called A maximization. So RIR, the correct RIR, is the linear combination which locally maximizes the A-type conformal anomaly as a function of trial R charges. So a trial R charge would be an arbitrary linear combination. actually an arbitrary linear combination of all the U1s, even the ones that you could argue just physically don't couple or couldn't mix. And the one combination that locally maximizes, and there's a unique maximum, this A anomaly, is the correct one, Schrödinger and Wecht. There's obviously no such thing in three dimensions. There's no conformal anomaly and nothing to maximize. But the Euclidean S3 partition function, specifically the one computed by localization, depends on this R symmetry in the way that I just said. It depends on delta through the variation of the fermion in the chiral multiplet, and delta is equal to just QIR. So I've rewritten here the one-loop determinant for the chiral multiplets. And you'll notice something that I pointed out earlier, that is that the real masses, which are basically some input parameter MI, it's a sum of some input parameter MI and the charge of this particular chiral field under this particular flavor symmetry. That's what we call the mass of the field when we weakly gauge it with background parameters MI. And delta, the IRR symmetry, which again can be written as the R symmetry in the UV plus some other linear combination, but that's also multiplied by the charge under the flavor symmetries, because it's the flavor symmetry that mixed with the UV R symmetry, they come in to this partition function in a holomorphic way. Partition function depends holomorphically on them. That's this part up here. So AI plus IMI appears and not its complex conjugate. The variation with respect to these MIs is a one-point function. Right? It's an insertion of what's an integrated one-point function. It's an insertion of whatever this real mass multiplies in the action. And this says, after a little bit of convincing, this says that it vanishes in the IRCFT. You can prove that it doesn't mix with the identity and that it actually vanishes. This is work by Jeffers. And by holomorphicity, this implies that not only that one-point function vanishes, but actually the derivative with respect to AI. And it's the derivative with respect to absolute value of Z for reasons that I won't go into. So because the one-point function vanishes, this derivative vanishes, and this is obviously a sort of criterion to tell you what the correct AIs are, right? At the correct point AI, the one that actually determines the linear combination that is the preferred IRR symmetry, this derivative vanishes. So we say that the absolute value of the Euclidean partition function on S3 is extremized at the correct trial R charge, which sounds like a statement very similar to A maximization. And this is work by Jeffers. Okay, an extension of this is to treat this Euclidean partition function, or rather its logarithm, as the free energy, and to sort of conjecture that just like the A theorem in three dimensions, where you say that A decreases between the IR and the UV and the IR, that this does the same thing. It decreases along renormalization group flows. And this is a much, much more general conjecture. Has nothing to do, in fact, with supersymmetric theories. You can, if you could compute this sort of thing, this sort of partition function on the sphere, this is conjectured to hold for any three-dimensional theory. So this sort of classifies three-dimensional fixed points. One simple check that you could run on this is the fact that this function is constant on the conformal manifold, that is, it's constant if you do a small deformation of your CFT and take it to another CFT. And again, that's for the reason that I said before, because going to a CFT right beside it would mean just inserting a one point. Okay. So we've already checked, I said before, that F scales in the correct way at large n. It reproduces this n to the 3 over 2 and its coefficient, even for n equals 2 theories. This is work by these people and their collaborators. But it's very different from the A theorem in 4 dimensions. F is a global quantity, does not appear, or Z is a global quantity, does not appear in the correlation function, in correlation functions of the fields, right? It's very, very different from the A-type anomaly or the conformal anomaly C in 2 dimensions. For instance, it can sometimes appear to be 0 or infinity for theories in 3 dimensions, and it can be non-vanishing for topological theories like Chern-Simons. I showed you the partition function for Chern-Simons. So if it's counting degrees of freedom, it's even counting degrees of freedom for a topological theory. Still, this sort of conjecture could hold and has been subjected to some testing. That was my last slide. So in summary, localization of 3D gauge theories on S3 reduces the computation of BPS observables, for instance, the partition function, to solving or calculating in a matrix model. Observables evaluated using localization reproduce other exact and perturbative results for, let's say, pure Chern-Simons theory or just perturbation theory for some large K theories, and results for holographic duals. Comparing the partition functions and expectation values for Wilson loops in the matrix model gives a strong check of various dualities that are proposed for 3D theories. And as a bonus, the S3 partition function actually solves this question of determining exactly the IRR symmetry. I should say that if you ask it what is the IRR symmetry, it is not a linear, it's not a linear combination where the coefficients are all algebraic numbers like in 4 dimensions. The coefficients are actually just numbers. Also a bonus, the free energy derived from Z reproduces the one in supergravity, and it might help in analyzing the RG flow of 3D theory. So this really has nothing to do with localization. It's the conjecture that the Euclidean partition function serves as an analog of C in 2 dimensions and classifies conformal fixed points, and it always decreases from the UV to the IR, something very important to find out in any quantum field theory. And using the localized version allows you to check this for supersymmetric theories. And the fact that you have this Z extremization for the R symmetry allows you to actually check it because you need to know the exact partition, right? There was a relationship between A maximization and the A theorem, and it's the same relationship between Z extremization and the F theorem. The fact that you can extremize or maximize over a larger set in the UV than in the IR. Okay, some future directions. So some of these have been asked about. We know that monopole operators play a role in duality in 3 dimensions, so these are a particular kind of defect operators, local ones, and they could be computed using localization, and there are other defect operators that are also on the table, like loop operators that might mix with Wilson loops. Localization could therefore be useful in probing the structure of the chiral ring, since the chiral ring is made up of both these monopole operators and the operators that are constructed from the fields. You can, of course, simply incorporate more complicated quivers, arbitrary representations, and so on. You don't need to do anything to do that. I wrote out everything for a general representation and a general gauge group. It could be a product gauge group. And things that I didn't talk about, different manifolds, dimensions, amount of supersymmetry, and boundary conditions that also come under the heading of localization. Thank you.